lovelies. It's Lara. It's my birthday. It's April 9th. I'm a day late getting out the first episode of season 3 with Nina Hartley. And I've realized that most people either totally know Nina Hartley and are stoked on her because she's amazing, or people haven't heard of her. So either way, you're going to love this episode. She is a legend. She is brilliant. She is fierce, honest, so many things. She's been a sex worker for 32 years. She's been a midwife, a nurse, an educator, and she's rocking out. And this was an amazing time for me. She was on my wish list of people to interview, and yeah, it only took 20-something episodes to manifest that. Okay, and this episode is long. Nina hung out with me for like 2 hours, so it's two different episodes. This is part one, and part two will be out next week. I'm recording on my headphones for my phone right now. I have no idea how this is going to sound. I hope it sounds okay, and yeah, stoked to be back. I'll talk to you soon.
Question. No question is off limits. No topic too weird.
Fabulous.
I just had my March marked the beginning. This month, last month was my 32nd anniversary. So I'm now into my 32nd year in front of the camera.
Wow.
84 was my first movie, and I've never retired. So I have no comeback. I have no. She's been gone, but now she's back. It's right. Like, where the fuck would I go? Because half the women in porn have a wish for a normal life, monogamy, stability, maybe kids, regular life, and I'm not that person. Mm-hmm. I'm never gonna have a regular life. I have no kids. Praise be to Jesus. at least once a week, my husband and I will look at each other and go, "Thank God we don't have kids."
Yeah.
Just with the world, I'm an auntie. I'm a great auntie, and I just don't know how they look at their kids in their face and go, "Hi, here's the world that you were born into." Mm-hmm. But you can't not have kids because China. You see what happens in China when they're only having one child per family, and they're aborting girl babies. It's like 20 million excess men of marriageable age in China. I think that's the number.
Serious?
That's the number in my head. I think I heard 20 million.
Wow.
And so they're kidnapping brides from Thailand and Cambodia, number one. Number two, what's going to happen to all those men who have no stake in the future because they have no family and no wife and no hope?
What's going to happen to the patriarchal paradigm?
You'd think that if there is in India too, that with fewer females per, not enough females per man, mm-hmm. that the worth of females would go up.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
Yeah.
Although apparently in Beijing, women, there's now a new kind of woman who has her own money, and because women are in short supply, they are really making the man jump through financial hoops. So I'm not going to date you if you don't have a car and an apartment and mm-hmm. a job. Huh. Well,
that's happening here on OkCupid too.
Seriously?
Oh yeah.
I've not been single. I don't even know. I'm single now. I don't know what I would do. So to tell me about OkCupid, what kind of things are you seeing there?
Well, I just think, yeah, in their profiles, women are looking for this like fairy tale Prince Charming guy that doesn't really exist.
We tried to kill that 40 years ago. That was the 70s. Prince Charming does not exist. Get your own horse.
Yeah.
You know, a woman without a man is like a fish without a bicycle. I mean, there is to kill Prince Charming. Wow. Mm-hmm. This paradigm was, we tried to put a stake in it back in the early 70s, 40 years ago or more, and still, well, you don't kill 2,000 years of patriarchy or 5,000 years of patriarchy in 50 years of media culture.
That just
people try to talk to me about, monogamy is not natural, or try to, the religious prohibition against certain sexual behavior, and it's like, okay. We have a million years of evolution and 10,000 years of culture. Which weighs more?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no. And it's that biology evolution thing. So if pleasure wasn't an important part of human interaction and social cohesion, the sexual response cycle as humans experience it would not have evolved. You know, Mother Nature doesn't do mistakes, and something as highly specialized as the human sexual response cycle, especially for men too, but certainly for women, clearly there's a huge evolutionary benefit to the fact that women, human females, are able to connect to this erotic energy pretty much at will. Things being equal, you can conjure it at any time, and turns out that our arms like just the right length. Don't tell anybody, but you can conjure it any time. It's crazy.
So, how do you think pleasure plays into that evolutionary?
I think you said something about pleasure.
So
yes, certainly. Yeah. So if people listening to the podcast today have not yet read the book by Christopher Ryan called Sex at Dawn, Run, Get Now. Mm-hmm. And then a good companion book actually is by Esther Perel called Mating in Captivity. Can we desire what we already have? That's the bullet point. So those two books, not by me, so I'm promoting other people's books. I was reading them going, yes, exactly, you tell them. Because especially Sex at Dawn, I had these ideas many years ago, because in the 70s, the theory about sex and pleasure were created by people who had been raised in the 30s, 40s, and 50s and saw the problems with gender roles and the homophobia and so the beginnings of what we think of as normal culture were quite revolutionary, of course, back in the day. And so I realize now I didn't have the word queer, didn't have the word poly, I didn't have the word alt, but I obviously like people, you know, who are gay, and they knew they were gay since they were two. I've realized now that I've always looked at the culture from an alt, alien, Spockian remove.
I can relate to that.
And so before I was having sex, the ideas about sex that were being put forth like made total sense to me. Free love, non-monogamy, non-possessive, that the patriarchal culture about owning women's bodies is bullshit, and take responsibility for your orgasm. What does that, and that actually, what does that mean? It means a whole lot. If you really do it, and not. So now 40 years later, so pleasure. So 40 years later, I've been working the program that pleasure is good for you, consent is essential, and if it's consenting, I don't like it, that's my issue, not yours, handle it. So now we have people young as you who grew up post that and were more easily able to absorb the new thinking because you had not been overly perverted by the bad thinking. Your parents had the leftover bad thinking, but they tried to raise you. You're 30. They tried to raise you.
Thank you.
They tried to raise you differently, and you are different. Mm-hmm. My parents, I'm completely different from everyone in my family. So pleasure. You know about bonobos, and if you look at how pleasure operates on the brain, it creates feelings of closeness, oxytocin, bonding, astral travel, mind melding, boundaries breaking away. I mean, it's just pleasure is an altered state of consciousness. Mm-hmm. And you can do it by sleep deprivation, you can daven, you can twirl, you can take psychoactive drugs, you can go into an isolation tank, you can fire the part of the brain that is quote unquote spiritual through any number of physical mechanisms. I like pleasure because it's portable, it's easy, there it is, you can do it, I can do it, they can do it, wow. And if we do it properly or mindfully or consciously, it can do a lot of growth and healing and connection and intimacy and bonding and community. So I'm part of the alt community. So, you know, I have a large number of friends that if any more than two of us in a room together, there'll be group nudity. There'll be at least group rubbing. It may go all the way to anal fisting. We don't know. But when you're with people of like mind and you say that consensual pleasure is a good, and so you and I may be going at it, and the third person maybe it's holding your hair or rubbing your foot, but they're contributing to the energy. They're in the room. So I don't have to be, I don't like being the center of sexual attention. It's like, it's been done. Don't tell anybody. But I like as a nurse, I like facilitating pleasure. And I'm a nurse, and in our culture, sexuality is sick, and sick people need a nurse's care. So when you think about Clara Barton, you think about Florence Nightingale, what did they do? They went into the trenches and offered comfort to suffering people.
So, okay, and so, so I want to go back to the 70s.
Yes, please.
And that's when you were...
Is young that teenager. I was born in 59, so okay. I got out of high school in 77.
Okay.
So I was consciously aware of the 70s free love stuff. I grew up in Berkeley, California, so it was a rant, was in the air, mm-hmm. But I was too young to participate in it. Now, if I'd had, when I was 13, if I'd had a 13-year-old girlfriend who was bolder than I, we would have gotten all kinds of underage, cross-generational trouble, because it was the 70s, and they didn't have a real grasp on boundaries then. Mm-hmm. And I'm an odd duck. If in back in the way back machine, if in the, you know, the apparently pre-patriarchal world, they would have come through the village and picked me to go to the temple, or picked me to become a healer or a midwife or a shamaness. That's my trip. So in the modern world, so for me at 12 or 13, being around people having sex, not having it, but witnessing it would have been very interesting to me. Mm-hmm. But that was not okay. Did not happen, barely. So I didn't have sex with someone until I was 18. Saw my first porn at 18. Was reading it earlier. So back to the 70s. What about the 70s?
Well, I was just wondering. Yeah, I was wondering. I had my timeline off because, yeah, like, were you part of that? Were you experiencing that free love movement, and how did that affect you?
I was witnessing the free love movement, and it affected me greatly.
Okay.
Because I was like, I want that. I want to live like that. Because by the time I was 12, before I had seen the word orgy, I was dreaming of rooms full of naked people. Cool. Yeah. I want to do that. Yeah, that's so fun. Oh, my God. And I recognized early on that if I'm around naked people, I'm fascinated by naked bodies of all shapes and sizes. I'm fascinated by bits, naughty bits. It's like after 30 plus years in porn, if someone lets me be next to their naughty bit, that's like, really, for me? So I'm filled with endless and boundless enthusiasm, for my own selfish purposes, ooh, bits. Plus, as a nurse, I was gonna be a midwife. And do you know anybody who has babies?
Well, I have a background as a birth doula and a midwife assistant. So I've seen lots. Yeah.
Okay.
Which is one of the reasons I was very excited to talk to you, because overlap in the birth.
So I'm militant in that. I believe in free abortion on demand. I believe that, you know, routine infant circumcision is a form of genital mutilation, mm-hmm. not as bad as FGM, but still unnecessary and affects men's pleasure later. So I'm super 70s radical that way. My body is mine. So birthing, mm-hmm. taking a healthy woman with no complications, you know. The labor's going to take, how long it's going to take, what we're going to sing some, we're going to chant some, we're going to rub your back some, we're going to walk some into the tub, into the shower, have some ice chips, and we're going to walk some, I'm going to chant some, we're going to rub your back some, we're going to get into the tub some, we're going to get in the shower some, and eventually the body will do what it does.
Yeah.
And a baby will be born. And all we do is support the woman. No ego, doesn't matter what you want, doesn't matter what I want, doesn't matter what mom wants, doesn't matter what her body needs. We're going to give the body what it needs as long with as good a heart as we can, as long as it takes. And eventually, we're going to have a baby. Oh, my God. Which is amazing, right? There were two people in the room, and now there are three people. Seriously?
Yeah.
No. Seriously? A whole other person. Mm-hmm. I get chills thinking about it. It's been years since I was able to be in the room with the birth. So, pleasuring. There's the birthing process and the pleasuring process in our culture, of course. Shames bodies, and we punish people for touching themselves, and so people have a disordered relationship to consensual pleasure in our culture. Mm-hmm. And the origins are myriad, and books have been written about it. So what we have here is a person in front of us who is not connected with their body.
Were you going to births at hospitals or home births?
Yes, hospitals, because nursing school. I was never going to be I was looking to be a nurse midwife, not a lay midwife, and I was definitely would have been a proponent of the what now common birthing center and tubs in hospitals, because most of the time it's fine. And then, as you know, when something goes wrong in birth, it goes wrong very quickly. And so the conservative in me says, let's have a nice home-style room here, but through those doors, just in case, That way everyone can relax. So that's just me. But my niece had both her babies at home, and so I know plenty of home birthing people, and so I have no problem with it. And that's a whole other political thing. So birthing. So we have people, a person appears who for whatever reason or conglomeration of reasons is not at home in their skin. And how can they be expressing this dissatisfaction? They could be drinking, they could be drugging, they could be punishing themselves with too much food, too little food, too much exercise, too little exercise, too many relationships, no relationship. But however we punish ourselves because we're not happy here. We've been given no tools to calm or soothe ourselves when we are upset. The adult's job is to teach the child how to manage their emotion, how to recognize and manage their emotions, because emotions, feelings, stub toe, love, have a bell curve, and the bell curve can be a whole life. The bell curve can go 90 years or it can go 3 minutes if I stub my toe, but the bell curve of sensation and intensity starts off low, goes to its high point, and ends. So how long that wave is depends. So you have a person, so birthing contractions, if you're taught it's going to hurt, you're going to experience that intensity as pain, or you're going to experience that as intensity, but I can manage it with my breathing, I can manage it with the pressure on my back, I can manage it, it's not scary, it's intense, it's challenging. I'm not going to say birth is not challenging, but it has to be painful and scary. No, it can be challenging and exhilarating. So that's the mentality of the person experiencing the sensation and the caregivers around her, how is that energy being transmitted to the birthing woman, to the pleasuring person? So how can I, as the facilitator, nurse, caregiver, healthcare provider, pleasure doula, how can I help this person into their body long enough for them to recognize what's going on? So, and this is, we get into the bright books, this work is can be done at home. So reorienting my relationship to pleasure was 80% of the therapy. And you and everybody else. And that you can do at work alone, in a room, doors are locked, you have your books, you have your candles, you have your lube, whatever. And it's just you and your body and the pleasure. So pleasure is both the carrot and the stick, right?
Yeah.
It's the car and the road. It's the engine and the gas. It is the alpha and the omega.
Say more about why someone would need to reorient toward pleasure. I know what you mean, but the general public might need to know what that means.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't ever think about this. I've never been 50 years. So I believe that pleasure is our birthright as humans. We have a functioning nervous system, and we have this incredible collection of nerves that are specifically for feeling good. I mean, that's all they do.
Hormones.
Right. Well, there's that, but just so our genital nerves are connected to a part in our brain that just makes us feel really good. Oxytocin, the dopamine, just like, oh, wow, this is a really awesome sensation. And I can make this in my body through, wow, cool. So there is the fact that our bodies have this capacity, which I believe is evolved for. So that means it's important. So the capacity for pleasure is an important part of being human. Else we would have a mating season.
Right.
Right. And if you know anything about animals that don't mate year-round, which most don't, dolphins, I think cats and dogs, pigs can mate year-round. There's no mating season. But most animals have a mating season, insects all the way up to large mammals. And during mating season, you can't keep them off each other. When it's not mating season, you can't get them on each other.
Yeah.
Light switch goes on, mate, rut, 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 switch goes off, see you next year. Humans are different. Bonobos are different. Dolphins are different. So it's important. I think it's important. And then there is the incredible bond. So why reorient our relationship to pleasure? Because by doing so, we, an individual, and this can be done solo, celibate, single. It's not about another person. It's about my relationship to my body. And by reorienting my relationship to pleasure to a place where I can consciously and with volition pleasure myself in a way that does not cross my value system or belief lines, that fundamentally changes my relationship with my body, the body in which I walk through life and experience the world, interact with the world. Mm-hmm. So if I'm able to be at home in my skin, if I'm able to recognize discomfort and discharge discomfort, that I am a more centered person. And so your trip doesn't pull me up. So if I'm centered, oh, I have a good heart, a good heavy ass, then the craziness around me does not pull me off balance, because I know that I can find center because I'm gonna have a good relationship with my body. I can treat it nicely. I can give it what it needs. I can please it. And then when I'm healthy, I can then use what I know to please another. And then, so there's intimacy with myself. That means I believe in mental freedom. So there's no wrong thoughts, only wrong actions. So think whatever gets you juicy, do it. I don't care what it is. Some of my fantasies are against the laws of physics. They're immoral or illegal. So they stay in my head.
Yeah.
Because that's not going to hurt anybody there. But it does, it leads me to be more excited, which means I'm more open to you. I'm open to you. And also, if I'm okay with my pleasure, I don't need to judge you for what gets you happy. And we get to the judging thing, so I can go, that's so cool. I don't get it, but it's cool. Hold your hair. Hold your foot. Hold the lube. Hold your hat. I mean, you know, watch from the corner of the room going, dang, really? I'm not going to hang from hooks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not my thing. But I see people hanging from hooks, and they're clearly in some happy zone. Like, okay, I prefer it more genitally focused and genitally oriented, my thing. But that's because I'm basically a hedonist, and I just like naked people. Can we just be naked? Because if we're all naked, something fun will happen. So it's important. So when an individual person does the work to become integrated physically with their body, then they are a whole person, and they can take that whole person into the world and negotiate relationships, negotiate the relationship with their God, just from a happier, centereder, less crazy place. And I'm less likely to put up with abuse.
Mm.
My first marriage. I'm less likely to put up with a cult leader, because I know in myself that, no, you know, that doesn't feel right. And I'm going to trust my body because I'm okay with my body. And until I got clear with that, I was more easily manipulated. I was more fearful. I was looking for approval, et cetera.
Yeah, it's kind of like a matter of trusting the body versus distrust of the body, which is that kind of puritanical denunciation of the body, right? That we still have programming from.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And that's why I like natural childbirth, because no matter what your programming might have been, baby, you on this train, ain't not getting off, you got baby. So let's just hang tight, relax, breathe deeper, and just go with it, because that's all we can do.
Well, the other connection I'm seeing too is like a highly aroused, deeply erotic trance. There is a lot of sensation, and it can be intense. And I've heard people say like they get to a point with their pleasure where they feel like they're going to die. It's like overwhelming, right? Mm-hmm. And childbirth is like that. Women get to a point, transition, right? Where
right.
It's like, oh my God, I can't take anymore.
I'm going to bust in two pieces.
Yeah.
This baby's going to flip me in half. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really about our capacity to experience and feel sensation.
Yes, 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 yes. Mm-hmm. Finger on the nose pointing at you.
Yes.
That's exactly it. And pleasure is just, I tell, you know, making love, people use that as a euphemism for PIV intercourse,
mm-hmm.
penis and vagina intercourse, pardon me. But love is a feeling. Mm-hmm. So we make love through friction and intention.
Mm.
The friction is my skin touches your skin or my own skin, and it creates electrochemical response. That's how nerves work. And it sends a nerve impulse to the part of your brain that creates a feeling, and it hopefully is a feedback loop. So do you ski at all?
I snowboard.
Okay, so you know, green circle, blue mm-hmm. square, black diamond, double black diamond. So most of us, Buddhism is my primary philosophy that I was exposed to growing up. So with the green circle, that is what we call, you're just asleep.
Mm.
You know, just dum-de-dum-de-dum, doing what you're doing, not difficult, doesn't excite you, doing it, hey, no challenge. And then there's double black diamond. We're gonna die. So when you're asleep in the green circle, no growth, no healing, no insight. When you're panicking in the double black diamond, no growth, no healing, no insight.
Mm.
So how can we use sex and pleasure to keep us in the blue square, just challenged enough that we have to be present so we don't hurt ourselves, but not so challenged we're gonna die. So why I like sex, and sex is of course whatever you want it to be, I can use self-selected, self-created, scripted situations where I can expose myself to just enough sexual fear, tension, scaredness to be in the blue square. Just enough so I can go, oh, what's going on here? What's my trip? How do I do? Oh, okay, got it. And back to green circle. Yeah, okay, good. Come. So for example, I'm going to masturbate. I'm going to be alone, make sure. For comfort, I need to make sure the door is locked, my phone is off, I have an hour, no one's expecting me because I have issues clearing my mind. So I'm going to take some. So now I start touching myself and I create a sensation that is a both sexy and scary. I can then use the pleasure to stay present. What's scary? What is scary about this? Huh? Let's push it. Okay. Back to okay. Little scary. What is that? Oh. And then sometimes I've had many revelations when I'm masturbating, like, oh my God, that's where that came from? Dude. So once you are revealed to yourself, because most of us hide from ourselves because that's what we do because we're ashamed. So pleasure, my body. So when we are reorienting ourselves to pleasure, using pleasure to poke at the tender spots of ourselves, safe pleasure, consensual pleasure, not hurting anybody else pleasure, but we get to poke at ourselves, poke at our bruises and go, and what is that? Oh, okay. It's pleasure to make it. Oh, it's okay. It'll be better. Kisses. And over time, it just took years because everyone has coming from a different starting point.
Yeah.
But we can do that in a way that we can heal a lot of our old stuff because eventually it is, my husband can't save me. My therapist can't save me. I have to do it. And when you can show your body that you're on its side, you're going to feed it nicely. You're going to treat it nicely. You're going to pleasure it nicely. You're going to learn how to accept a massage. It took me 5 years to learn how to accept non-sexual affectionate touch without turning into a board of wood. I had severe body armoring. Thank you, Wilhelm Reich, for that concept. And so learning how to breathe past my third rib, that took years.
Wow.
Because most, you know, little children under three, they're completely natural creatures. They love fiercely. They fear. I mean, they just talk about the bell curve. They're really, and so teaching them how to manage their emotions, teach them bodily autonomy, use the right words. And then when they start masturbating, because kids do that because they don't know that it's wrong to feel good, the adults are well advised to, instead of freaking out, just teach them about privacy. And it's not for other people, not in the living room, sweetheart. Darling, we don't touch our genitals at the dinner table. Go wash your hands and come finish supper. You know, instead of going, oh my, it's the adults. So adults pass on. So what happens, you don't know what your history is. So you don't even know what your teaching is. And then your child does something. And all of a sudden, rah, this thing comes up. It's like, it's a trigger. It's a wormhole. And so now, so by our reactions to our children, we can understand what was done to us.
Yes.
Because emotions, as you know, are ever fresh.
Mm-hmm. And even, I just heard an example someone was sharing with me the other day, how the child was masturbating in some public context and she was trying to be okay with it, but everything about her energy and the way she behaved said she wasn't. So she was like saying the words, but her actions were.
And the kid's going to hear the action, not the words.
Because
kids don't have the filter. But no, you can't. You can't shame the child, but the child cannot masturbate in public.
Right.
That you have to socialize our children. That is that, sweetheart, that's for private, darling. You know what mommy said, that's for private. You know, I'm glad you have this. It's so nice that you have this, but we wait to the car.
Yeah.
And it's hard because that means I, as in the adult mode, not only am I having to act as the adult, I'm also having to process my child emotions, which I didn't even know were happening until my child did that thing. And so now I'm 6 years old and completely humiliated, but now I have to be a good mommy. And whew.
Yeah.
So that's why I say, and it's never too late to start this getting okay with pleasure. Because again, in our culture, sexuality is sick and sick. People suffer. You know, they're suffering.
Yeah.
They hurt their bodies. They are isolated in relationship.
Feel like they're fucked up. They feel like they're the only ones.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking.
know.
And so that's, so, you know, why porn? My dad once said, why porn? Why not the violin?
Wait, before we go to porn, I have to ask you, because a bunch of my followers wanted me to ask you about orgasmic birth.
Awesome. If I was ever going to have a baby, I would definitely have gone for that.
Yeah. Did you get to witness that at all in your
experience?
No,
but I know women who have done it, and it makes perfect sense to me for the rush of hormones. And if you are a woman who already is okay with, because we think, you know, sex and babies don't mix, even though they're sort of connected. Just saying. This isn't out there. So again, if I as a woman was not shamed over my body and shamed over its capacity for pleasure and sanctified for the ability to give forth life. So I'm this is where the whole thing with Mary, the pure vessel, it's like women are animals, you know. I mean, we're as animalistic as men, and that's why, you know, if female sexuality was so passive, why are so many rules erected to contain it and constrain it and shame it and control it? So clearly, so orgasmic birth, I think, is awesome. I know that nipple stimulation can help with contractions. I know that orgasm can help jumpstart, you know, the pains. I had a friend years ago, 20 years ago, she was before her time. I said, so are you doing perineal massage? And she said, yeah, fisting.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Fisting's so, the new perineal massage.
It's one of those things that's absolutely possible. And also, you think about it, you have anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes continued pressure along the perineal sponge. Everything is swollen. You're pumped full of hormones.
And blood. And
stuff.
Juicy.
Yeah. So it completely... now, watch some women feel inadequate because they didn't have one.
Right.
Which is just so sad. But... again, women feel guilty for feeling sexual pleasure during breastfeeding. Women have had spontaneous orgasms from nursing their children, and they feel terrible about that. And depending on where you are in the country, if that you express that to a doctor, they may take your child away for abuse.
Oh, my God. Has that happened?
Yes. Yes.
Oh.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it don't get me started. Because okay. It makes things been tuned to the whole, tuned to the homicidal maniac. That's why it's yeah, la 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 la. Everybody's beautiful. So for me, you know, I'm rigorous. Yeah, and so there's how society hurts and suppresses female sexuality, and then how society hurts and suppresses male sexuality. And we have talk about the, you know, a lot of talk in the today about, you know, campus rape, and a lot of people are very angry at men because they're pigs and they're dogs and they're assholes. Mm-hmm. And while certainly many victims of male violence are female bodied, even more victims of male violence are male bodied. Mm-hmm. And so every, you know, it's the whole thing about, you know, you're drinking in public is a bad idea. Because when a person is not able to be fully aware of their surroundings, bad things can happen to them. They can, as little as getting their wallet or purse stolen, to falling off the curb and hurting their ankle, to getting hit by a car because they wandered into the street by driving while under the influence. They can be robbed and assaulted. And the added thing is, if the victim is female, the likelihood is there that she can be sexually assaulted on top of being beaten up. But men are murdered. I think most murder victims are still men. Mm-hmm. Most murderers are still men.
Is that what you mean by men? I want to clarify what you mean men are victim. There's more victims of violence.
If you look at the numbers, you know, how many victimizers are male people? Yeah. Right? And how many victims are male versus female people? You know, I don't have the numbers in my head. So we understand that, quote unquote, men are violent. Men have the capacity to be violent. But also because of how we inculcate and socialize men and boys, that they're left with that being the only expression of all of their feelings.
Right.
Because better not be a pussy, better not be a sissy. Oh, man, you soft. Whatever, just the way. And then, of course, the whole homophobic panic over anal eroticism. So for years I've said women in the culture have been amputated from their clits and men have been amputated from their hearts. So we're not allowed to have lustful feelings just because, dude, you're cute. Hey, I'm ovulating. Hey, you know, and men aren't allowed to say, you know, this is not right for me. I'm not ready for this, or I prefer to be in a relationship to expose myself to women. You know, I mean, just so the cultural trope that women never want it or they're gold digging bitches and men always want it or they're emasculated assholes, is just sets up an unreal expectation of the performance of gender.
Yeah.
That is, it doesn't allow for individuality. Like, okay, I'm polymorphously perverse. So sexually speaking, I'm a stem cell. You know, what do you need? what do you need me to be for the next hour? And I will plug in and do that. And so for me, I don't want to be with a violent man, but I, in my romantic life, I'm in a DS relationship. My husband is my dominant and I'm a switch, but when I'm alone with him, he's Fred and I'm Ginger, and I like it that way because it's just awesome and romantic and hot and sexy. Why? Because first, it's his true sexuality, and all I want from partners to be their authentic self. Mm-hmm. So he's done the work to become his authentic self. He's let go of the guilt. He's let go of what's wrong with him. He makes sure it's in the right context, et cetera, et cetera. And he does not lack for female companionship, because if you're a lady who likes that kind of thing, my guy's a good provider of said thing. If that's your thing, I will volunteer my husband. And so if men, everybody is well served by becoming okay with their own sexual thing, whatever that is. Just know what it is. How much of my parents, I had to let go of a lot. Some of my parents teaching about sex, but I had to keep some of it. You know, don't use it to hurt people. Don't do it where it's going to get you in trouble. A lot of my parents' values I did keep, but they're sexually old-fashioned and monogamous and modest, and that was not going to work for me. And they're heterosexual. I had to go over here. So each person in our post-scarcity culture, the fact that you and I can have this conversation is a sign of the luxury of our lives.
Yeah.
We're not risking rape going and firewood. Mm-hmm. We're not risking rape going to take a poop in the middle of the night. Although I think in India, sidebar, it's called a chamber pot. You know, get a 5-gallon bucket with a lid, and in the nighttime, poop on that. And in the daytime, you can go dig a ditch and go dig a hole and put it in there. But the idea that I'm leaving my house at night to go to the bathroom, it's like, call it chamber pot, you know, pot to piss in. That's what they're talking about. Yeah. As in not even having a pot. You're so poor, you don't even have a pot to piss in. They're talking about chamber pots. Hello. Anywho, side back. So when a male person in our culture who has to be strong and all the things that men are supposed to be, and he is actually human. So if he's not okay with a get some off. So if you're just masturbating because you're frustrated and doing it for 5 minutes and you're angry, that's going to set up a loop in you that is not going to hold you in good stead when you're with a partner. So I recommend to men, women don't, speaking of heterosexuals, but women, I recommend don't have anyone in your bed until you can give yourself an orgasm reliably and regularly by whatever method. Mm-hmm. Just until you know your thing. Just don't bother with a partner. Mm-hmm. And guys, don't bother getting a partner in bed with you until you can regularly and reliably stay in happy mode for at least 20 minutes. And not thinking about grandma panties, not thinking about, but happy, like, damn, this is awesome. Double points for masturbating with condoms. Mm-hmm. And triple points.
Thank you.
Triple points for when you're masturbating, practice putting on, taking off condoms so you feel smooth and boom, boom.
And masturbating with them to eroticize them.
Yes.
Yes.
And also to let your penis know, oh, that's what that feels like.
Yeah.
And also, quite frankly, guys, it's my job is to become orgasmic on my own so that you're not trying to lift the Sisyphusian rock. And dude, your job is to discover the condom you hate the least and have those.
Yeah.
You know,
well, women too, because I work a lot with women and moms who, you know, they don't want to go on birth control, but they don't want to use condoms, but they don't want to get pregnant again. And they're like, so many people are like, I hate condoms and anti-condom, which I get. Like, I'm surprised we don't have a better invention yet. And at the same time, like,
condoms are so much better these days than they used to be. And there's so many shapes. I mean, used to be Trojans were thick. They're the same size and shape. And my ex-husband had a terrible time with condoms because of the shape of his penis, it wasn't compatible. He had a really big, very large head glands. And so conventional condoms really were extremely uncomfortable for him. But now they have three different kinds of pouch-ended condoms. They have different thinness and texture. They have, if you're a narrow-shafted guy, they have iron grip and snugger fit, so you don't have to worry about them slipping off. I mean, so that's why it's important for each man to do thorough experimenting with all the available brands of condoms out there to find the one that bothers him the least.
Yeah.
And then you eroticize those in masturbation, make sure that you're comfortable putting them on, take them off, opening the package, boom, 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 you're smooth. So that when you're with a woman or a partner, sorry, don't want to assume heterosexuality, when you're with a partner, you have the confidence. That's what my sex education tapes are. It's like, I can't tell you how to get the girl to say yes to you, but once she does, I got some tips for you. A, B, C, these are, I have the same four or five moves that I start with, like in chess moves. Mm-hmm. You have the first five moves, and then it's a battle. But so I have the first five moves that's going to let me know, does she like what I'm doing? Because that's helpful to her like it. And what's the response to how I do what I do? Okay, got it. And then it can be more freeform. But you have a more formalized, for me, you know, I will bite your neck a certain way. I'm going to pull your hair. So I'm just going to touch you in a way that lets me know how your body works. And then I'm going to, and you're going to find out. Do I pay attention to you? So that's just, you know, how is this? Hey, we've expressed interest, and now is it going to be any good? Mm-hmm. Are we going to be good together? Because sometimes, you know, people I've definitely interested in, we don't have enough in common sexually except flirting.
Right.
I have one friend that flirting is the entirety of her sex life because she's basically straight. Mm-hmm. And she's never going to go to bed with me. It's not ever going to happen. But she knows I'm not going to push for that, so she's not uncomfortable by my flirting. And because I have other sex outlets, I'm not annoyed by the fact that I'm never going to get her. It's like, oh, yay, nice, hey. You know, and that, so men have to undo their, I have to undo my conditioning about I don't get to have it, I don't get to be lusty, I don't get to want non-conventional sex. And men get to undo their training about what does masculinity mean to them, what does my body mean to me, what is my pleasure cycle, what do I like to think about, what do I want in my life, because that's my job. And then how do I, as a female, how do I reconcile my true sexual nature with what the culture expects, mm-hmm. and how comfortable am I being non-conventional? Mm-hmm. And then men get to do the same thing. How does my sexuality intersect with the performance of masculinity? And how much of that do I want to make public? I mean, I'm not going to talk about the fact that I like to wear silky ladies' panties under my suit. And we're going to keep that to myself. But I really like wearing, I like the feel of silkiness on my dick. So yeah, I'm going to do that because I get to do that. Mm-hmm. So there is the, so everybody, it's still radical for an individual body to claim what pleases it.
Yeah, for everyone. Everyone. Absolutely.
It, regardless of orientation, regardless of representation, regardless of presentation, regardless of gender identity, you know, celibate, monogamous, poly, it doesn't matter. It's like, again, each entity, each biological entity is charged in a post-scarcity culture, such as ourselves, us, with doing their own homework to become whole themselves. Mm-hmm. Part of it is work alone, because my shit's my shit. And then part of it is learning how to then talk to people and interact with them and dance around. So I talk about the Venn diagram. Here's what I like and here's what you like.
Yeah,
and you have to figure
out.
And so for some people, coffee, that's, anal fisting, yay. You know, and if I can state what I love and want without embarrassment and hear what you have to say without defensiveness, we might at least be friends, you know? And there are people I've expressed delight in that it took 5 or 6 years for the sexual situation to show up. And it was awesome. My one, Barbara Corella, see if you've got a chance to do her on your show, you should. She, urbantantra.org. By the way, Barbara Corellis. So for 4 or 5 years, when we first met, I was like, you're so cool. You're really cool. and then finally at sex camp, the timing was right. We went to the makeout room and had a lovely session, and people were watching, and it was so beautiful. It's like, oh, so worth the wait. And we haven't seen each other physically since. It's been 5 years.
Oh my
But
gosh.
I know, but I love her and she loves me. And wow. I know that she's out here doing her Barbara Corellis thing. I'm doing my Nina Hartley thing. We're good vibe each other. And I love her. And if I could see her more often, I totally would. But in the meantime, oh, I love Barbara. And that's because I'm cool with what I am and she's cool with what she is. And we're cool. And it's not because we're cool, but we have done the work.
Yeah.
To be okay in ourselves. So when you are comfortable with yourself, I don't need to judge you. I don't fear your judgment. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not doing this I'm not doing this for effect.
Right. To get something or prove something or, yeah.
So some people, I'm not doing it to get drugs. I'm not doing it to, well, yes, I certainly hope to help dismantle the patriarchy, because the patriarchy harms women and men differently. And the patriarchy harms the environment strongly. And the patriarchy combined with capitalism and monotheistic Abrahamic religions really did a number.
Ooh, okay. I want to get into this, but first I want to ask you about porn and how you got into porn. And then I want to talk about, feminism and sex work. Yeah.
The short story about getting into porn, I first discovered written porn at 14 in Berkeley, both at the bedside of the people I babysat for and in a youth bookstore and the underground comic book store. If you really want to know everything about me, Young Lust Comics number one, the story about the the couple who have a woman come over and show them some things. And I was, I don't know what year old it was when I first saw that. I said, I want that job. You know, because she came, she showed, she left. It's like, yeah. So I recognized early on that I, you know, Andrea Dworkin hated porn for many reasons. But one of the things she hated about it was it showed women as quote unquote whores by nature. And I agree with Andrea Dworkin that not all women are whores by nature, but, says Nina, raising her hand, some are. So for me, I'm a whore by nature. If whore, air quotes, and the word whore means a person who has sexuality different from yours, or a woman who is in fully control of her own sexual expression. So if a woman is challenging my ideas about female sexuality, this culture says I get to shame her by calling her a slut or a whore.
Yeah.
And once a woman's been labeled slut or whore, which is a value judgment more than it is a statement of fact, then I no longer have to respect her, because whores don't deserve respect, because women are supposed to be pure. Thank you, frickin' Abraham. My friend, my sister, my niece calls the Abrahamic God the bossy sky god. I'm talking to call me bossy sky god. So the bossy sky god, you know, is very, and it's a patriarchal religion for a difficult time, the harsh religion for a harsh time. I get it. It's now 2,000 years later, or if I'm Jewish, so for 5,500 years later, so, you know, we can move on. But that's another story. So I recognized early on that I was bisexual, and I was an exhibitionist and a voyeur. Ooh, French. So before I had any activity with other people, I understood that I had labels that applied to me. Luckily, it was early 70s, and I was living in Berkeley, so I had access to the information, access to the books. So I understood early on that I was reading porn, liked it, saw Playboy, loved it. I grew up working the Renaissance Pleasure Fair. So all the 70s, you know, Celts and Kilt and wenches and cleavage, it's like, yes, sign me up. So, you know, I'm fully imprinted on role-playing and costume. I love flamboyant dandy men in costumes and a feather in their hat. It's like, yeah, I like hipster beards. I like guys with mustache wax. I like men who know their individual style, can peacock it and be proud of their sexual nature. What I never understood, of course, was jealousy. And I did a lot of work on my own personal issue with jealousy, because I couldn't have the life I wanted if jealousy was still acting in my life, because I'm not monogamous. Mm-hmm. I'm not monogamous.
So when did you figure that out?
I knew at 12 I was reading that, you know, homosexual experimentation is a natural phase of adolescent behavior. And then by 14, it wasn't a phase. Mm-hmm. Like, girls were still interesting. So I knew early on that I was a bisexual person. And so it wasn't until I tried to live an open relationship the first time that I realized that I had... That's a whole other story. So the idea that, again, going back to the early feminism, that the patriarchy owning women's bodies, women take responsibility for your orgasm, get out that mirror, look at your vulva. It's not down there. It's your vulva. It's not dirty and icky. It's beautiful and self-cleansing. Get a mirror. God damn it. That's what I did. I was like, oh my God, it is. Yeah, it's cool. So the idea that jealousy is learned, and I was feeling it. Jealousy isn't natural, but I was feeling it. So I really had to do battle with my feelings, because feminism said I had the right to live the life I wanted and the obligation to do it safely. And this jealousy thing was really harsh in my high, totally getting in my way of living. For some people who are monogamous, when they're in love, they don't want anybody else. but their partner. And it's natural for them. It's not difficult. They don't have to try. It's just the way that it is. When I'm in love, you're it. I don't want, yay, you, all you, nothing but you all the time, time, time. And for me, no matter how attached I got to somebody, well, hello.
Yeah.
You know, so I that's why I'm like the sacred whore. So when I first discovered the concept of the sacred prostitute, it's like that, sign me up. Mm-hmm. Because I, as a sexual stem cell, and as a sexual healer and as a nurse, I am here as a doula. You're here to help this particular woman with her birthing process. And you have a clean slate. You accept so you know how you approach. So if I'm a pleasure doula, for me, there's sex for love, which is awesome. And it's the best ever. Sex with love, top of the charts. No question about it. Mutual reciprocal love. Whoa. Mm-hmm. Awesome. And then there's all the other kinds of sex you can have, which are equally valid, equally healing, equally useful. And for me, equally exciting. Differently, but equally exciting. So once for me, I don't need my love and romance in the same place. That's mm-hmm. the poly aspect of my nature. I'm lucky to have love in my life. And it's hard to find a heterosexual man who can love a whore.
Yeah.
And not be a pimp and not be an asshole, not be insecure. So this is why, you know, my husband is super secure. And he is super, super secure, which is, I need that in a guy and any partner. Because for me, there, and I like the sex I have of other people, and it satisfies certain emotional aspects of my nature. But people have said, Nina, if you're not going to be monogamous, why be married?
Yeah.
You know, and so I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
And so for me, marriage is the through relationship. So my husband is a beautiful, finely wrought chain that I wear around my neck all the time. Mm-hmm. And every other sex act that I do is a beautiful bead that I add to that chain. This one's a carved bone bead. This one is a jade bead. This one is a cool berry thing I found in the woods. This one, but every, and the person I have sex with a whole bunch of time, that turns into a little tassel of garnet beads, you know, so every, but the foundation of my ability to have all this other sex and have it be good is that my ongoing need for intimacy and love and support is met by an appropriate partner who is himself non-monogamous, himself not jealous or possessive. So I needed a person who's not jealous or possessive, because my philosophy says, as a poly person, I want my partner to have everything they need. And if they're not doing something to piss me off, any feelings I have about it are my issues. Thank you so much for showing them to me. I really appreciate it. I clearly didn't know that that was still an issue. So thank you. So if you're not being a dick and I have an issue, my philosophy says, I don't get to tell you, stop that.
Right.
And once, not about 5 years ago now, such a thing happened. He had a very strong response to somebody, and I had an equally strong back. And he said, I'll stop seeing her. I mean, I'm the wife. He loves me. And I know that. And I said, A, I don't want you to stop seeing her, because she is, you get to share something with her that you and I don't share. An aspect of your sexual energy gets to come out and have a dance and polish you up. And I don't connect with that part of you. So cool on that. And you stopping to seeing her now wouldn't matter, because I saw what I saw. Mm-hmm. And the challenging, painful reality for living an open, non-monogamous life is that as much as I want to dance with all of his aspects, the couple I can't. And vice versa. The much as he would like to dance with my vanilla side, no can do. He's DS all the time.
Yeah.
And so when I'm with him, it's always DS. But now with other people, it's other kinds of non-power exchange sexuality. And so there's a bittersweetness. We are the best partners for each other. But there's a part of him that I can never, ever dance with. And there's a part of me that he can never dance with. And monogamy wouldn't change that. And non-monogamy is not going to change that, because in the end, so we match up 80% of the time. And there's a couple little dangling participles. And so I have a little bit of vanilla on the side that I see. And he's so straight. It's just so adorable. But he's a friend from high school, or it wouldn't work.
Wow.
And then I totally support. So we're the kind of open couple that we play together and separately. And that's fine with us. Other couples handle non-monogamy in a whole different, each couple is different.
Yeah.
How they handle non-monogamy. So there's no right or wrong way. There's a right way for you. Mm-hmm. So for me, porn was, first I had to reconcile feminism and porn. Could I be a feminist and still want to take off my clothes for men?
I hope you enjoyed the first part of this episode with Nina Hartley. Stay tuned next week for part two. And we just stopped doing the podcast, and then we just sat there and kept talking. So it's kind of this like cool behind the scenes, just like moment that we all had. Also, she talked like so much in the first episode. And I realized I actually speak more in the second episode. So, I mean, she has plenty to say, fascinating things. So it's all perfect. But yeah, you'll hear it get a little bit more casual and playful next time. So we will see you then. Lots of love.